points.
Oh, yep.
All right, let's start that again. Right, guys, welcome to Centre Square Podcast. Couple of boys trying something new, bit of fun and a muck around. So, five of us, Bray Loveridge, Noah Tonkin, Callan Levitt, Ethan Roth, and myself, Luca Vinning. We're going to be trying all things footy during the winter and then a bit of cricket in the summer. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Centre Square Podcast and like the Facebook page. Just search Centre Square Potty on Facebook and give us a like. So we're going to jump straight into the footy reviews of the weekend, and we're going to start off with Friday night's game. So,
yep.
Who's got that game?
Yeah, that's me. So Friday night was Geelong versus Richmond. Obviously, Richmond went down big time to Geelong. Scores were Geelong 104 to Richmond 37. I reckon Geelong have now cemented their spot as the number one team of the comp after that win at the MCG in the big stage. Some key points for the game were the Geelong midfield stood up and showed how much depth they have, with Duncan and Guthrie having 61 touches between them.
That's not bad.
Along with Dangerfield starring for the Cats, having 38 disposals.
Paddy Dangerfield.
Yep, the big fella. 17 of those contested, 7 marks and 9 tackles. Another player who also stood up for Geelong, I thought, was Ryan Myers. Kicked 3 snags, had 21 touches. And, yeah, he put the Richmond defenders under a lot of pressure, as they already lost Rance, Asprey and Ellis. Neither of them were playing. And the only downside for Geelong was Radiglia, the hamstring injury. And I thought best on ground was Dangerfield. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that just puts Geelong 2 games clear at the top of the table. So what are your thoughts on that, guys?
Yeah.
Probably premiership favourite at the moment, I'd say.
Yeah, big time, I reckon.
They're just playing a much stronger brand of football. And at the moment, no one seems to be able to match that brand of football. So they've been quite competitive the last couple of weeks. And again, beating a quality team in Richmond just cements that premiership favourite spot.
Yeah, especially MCG as well.
Yeah.
They got such depth as well, like their midfield. Like, you got obviously James Hood, Kelly, main ones. But like, you've got like Duncan, Menegal, like all these ones just coming through and do the job. So.
Who's on the next report? Rothy, I think it is.
Yeah, it's me. I had the Carlton vs Brisbane game at Marvel Stadium on Saturday. So, coming to the game, wasn't really high expectations. Obviously, with the week Carlton had, the sacking of Brendan Bolton. But I was also like interested to see how David Teague would go as the caretaker, and also to see how Brisbane would go, looking to push their case for a final spot the first time in 10 years. So
hang on, Frothy, your mic seems to be cutting out, mate.
Does it actually?
Oh, that's a bit better now. It was just cutting out for a minute.
Wait, should I start again?
No, that's all right. Keep going. It's quite good now.
All right. Just tell me if it's bad again.
Yep.
All right. So first quarter, Lions came out strong. Eric Hipwood nailed the first goal from about 40 metres out, 45-degree angle. He received a bullet pass from Charlie Cameron at the 12th-minute mark of the first quarter. Rest of the quarter, Lions really dominated possession inside 50s. Carlton players really failed to man up, and Daniel Rich sent one to the goal square for McStatus, slot one in the open goal. Second quarter, Charlie Cameron does what he does best, getting front and center inside the first minute of the quarter. Have a quick fire snap on goal, which squeezed through. Lions really started to dominate all aspects of the game, but particularly the middle. Stephen Martin being first used to the likes of Neil Zorko. And when Hugh McCluggage kicked a nice goal on the run from 45, Carlton were under the pump. It was 40-3.
Yeah, that's quite hard to come back to. All right.
So any thoughts on that? Or?
Oh, not really. I think, Carlton have been a side that's struggling this year. So, again,
I think, you know, everyone was thinking, like, here we go again sort of thing.
Yeah, especially against a quality side of Brisbane, who haven't been playing bad footy this year. They're sitting sixth after the end of the round. So, you know, to lose to Carlton is a big upset.
And Carlton are sitting on 2-10 and 18th spot on the ladder as well, which they can work up definitely in the season.
Yeah, I thought
Chris
was big for them as well. Obviously.
I guess they've just got to show, you know, even though they're not going to make the eight or play finals footy, they've still got to ensure that they're playing a quality brand of football, or at least aiming to most weeks, so the fans aren't getting disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, and beating a quality side of Brisbane, it's always a good chance to show the comp what they've got.
But, yeah, I'll just run through the rest of the game quickly.
Yep.
So, third quarter... second quarter at the end of the first half, it was 22-40. So, Carlton actually got it back through Charlie Kerno, Gibbons, and Jack Silvani, make it 18-point ball game. Third quarter, Brisbane spotted the first goal when McSay goaled from 15 metres out directly in front. I think the turning point in the game was when Hugh McCluggins tried to go inside off half bat and Cripps cut it off and converted on the run.
That was a great goal.
Like, Cripps is, like, he's a great leader, but obviously he's the best player on their team. So I think that's happened, like, it shows leadership. He's probably, like, got the rest of the players up and about as well as their supporters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cripps definitely. Yeah, really
opposite of the first half, Mitch McGovern had the chance to put in them in front for the first time, and you know, obviously Chris Bang was furious, and then we're really set up for a good last quarter with a Carlton leading by 4 points. Who else but Patrick Cripps breaks through the pack to kick his third.
Yeah, that was a great goal.
Yeah, Paddy Cripps, I reckon he's a genuine contender for the Brownlow this year. He's obviously standing out.
Yeah, other than that, you know, he'll probably come second.
Yeah.
Just lastly, before I get into the big three on what I learned. Cripps kicked his fourth goal along with 38 disposals to seal a famous victory for the Blues.
Yeah.
You should have heard Eddie McGuire's commentary. He was jumping out of his seat.
Yeah. Another exciting win. Mm. Not another, but, you know, a genuine win for the Blues. Of course, the fans were excited, and you've seen it all over social media on the weekend. All the memes of Brisbane. But, yeah, good for Carlton to get a win finally.
Yeah.
They're second for the season. So, against the quality side of Brisbane, as I've said before. Just showing the comp what they've got, really.
Yeah, so they ran away 15-point winners, and now for the wrap up of the game, I'm just going to do the big three.
Yep.
The big three is basically the biggest three things we've learned during the game. It can be about the coaches, players, or whatever we really saw. So the first big thing that I learned was Sam Walsh is a lock for the Rising Star.
Yeah.
At the moment, he is easily Carlton's second best player.
Apart from Paddy Cripps.
Yeah.
Of course, he's the number one.
Behind Paddy Cripps, 32 disposals, and probably up there with the best and fairest at the moment. Probably coming second, I would say.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's not a bad call, actually. That's...
Yeah. Didn't he score like 130 or 136 GP points?
He's very courageous for his age as well. Like, he just... No fear, just goes in the pack and everything. So.
Yeah, sure.
The second thing I learnt, speaking about Cripps, he may as well start writing his Brownlow speech.
Yeah, there's not many other players that are looking as dominant as him at the moment.
Obviously, me and Noel are Freo fans, and obviously Nat Fyfe is the best player, but... he can do anything, and I think... Steve Silvani and the board at Carlton need to re-sign him because he's from WA. He's 24 years of age.
And he's still got tons of good footy in front of him.
And yeah, 24. Obviously, he's from WA. Any club would want him, but I think, you know, they really need to re-sign him in a long-term deal.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Carlton didn't have him? That would be a shambles.
I think, you know, beside the skill of Paddy Cripps, just the leadership that he shows with the young side of Carlton, even though they are struggling at the moment, you know, under and the leadership of Paddy Cripps.
He could actually play key forward as well. Like, he's 195 centimetres and probably, like, mid-90 kilos.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and the last thing I learned is this is a big one.
It's a big one. Big call.
Don't rule David Teague out of coaching the Blues beyond 2019.
Ooh.
I ruled him out.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about Alistair Clarkson, Paul Roos, even Ross Lyon. I'm telling you, don't rule David Teague out. I know it's only been one game, but if they continue to grow this year and maybe pull off a couple more wins, then I don't see why he can't be there next year, mate, man.
Yeah, that's
And also, like, if he's coaching his players, obviously you can't, even though Cripps is, like, the best, one of the best in the comp, if they can go hard over someone like Emilio or even, like, Jack Martin, who are both out of contract, I think we'll set them up.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're both out of contract. Canelio, they're probably both, if they do leave, they're probably going to go to a big Melbourne club. I know they're both from WA, but hard to see them come Starboro Free or West Coast.
Yeah.
Yep.
Free, but, I've had a lot of recruits lately. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
So, that's it. That's the game wrap-up. So... I'll hand over to Luca, and I think he's going to talk about the Gold Coast North Melbourne game. So, on to you when you're ready.
All right, mate. Easy. Cheers for that. Great analysis, Frothy. So, I had the Gold Coast North Melbourne game at Metricon on Saturday, Arvo. Bit of showers, but it didn't really affect the game, I don't think. You know, bit of ground surface. So, most of it was played on the ground. Big thing coming out of the game, Jack Siebel, 200 games for North Melbourne. Yeah. So, quality player, Jack Siebel. He finished with 29 disposals and 2 goals, so not a bad day out for him. You know, All-Australian mid, Sean Higgins coming off early with a shoulder injury. I was reading about that on Facebook, and apparently it's the AC joint in the right shoulder, so it was a nice, hard, fair tackle from Tuck Miller. But again, just unfortunate with the landing. So the game was sort of done by quarter time. You know, North Melbourne kicking 7 goals and being up by 35. So it was always hard for Gold Coast to come back from that. You know, you wouldn't think the first couple of rounds of Gold Coast, they were quite close games. I think all of them within a goal, actually. So for them to be done by quarter time was not embarrassing, but sort of hard for the fans, I guess. And they were just too slow to turn on, you know. So they were just... The North Melbourne players were just outrunning their opponents everywhere, all over the ground, with two leaving... And the Carlton players were just leaving the Roos players with too much space around the contested ball and just letting them run everywhere. So, again, it was hard to come back for them. Not too much coming out of that game, other than Jack Martin on report for rough conduct on Jack Siebel. So, you know, it was a hard, fair tackle, but it was probably just the action that looked a little bit aggressive towards the umpire. So he's on a report for that. It's probably a week at most, I reckon. Won't be much out of it. Not too much coming out of the game otherwise. So final scores being Gold Coast 11 goals, 6, 72, defeated by North Melbourne, 14 goals, 15, 99. So, on a wet day, you know, not bad scoring for North Melbourne, but if it were dry, they should have kicked a lot straighter, and that could have been a good percentage booster for them. And best on ground was probably Jack Siebel in his 200th. So,
He's a bull.
Yeah.
Done.
Yep. All right. Who had Saturday night's game? Was that you? No.
Yeah, that was me.
All right.
Noah did.
Yeah, so I had GWS versus Adelaide Crows, where Adelaide got up against the Giants, 82-61. I thought Adelaide have nagged another close win to put them in fifth spot. So, yeah, some key points were Josh Kelly and Tim Taranto were huge for GWS. I also noticed that when Kelly played well, which was the second and third quarter mainly, the Giants really played well. But he's obviously a big part of the Giants' success. And DeBoer shut down Sloan for the first half, but Sloan responded and kicked all two goals in the second half when he wasn't tagged by DeBoer. Obviously, the Giants really surged in the third quarter, which pretty much set them up for the fourth, but they couldn't convert. And then Adelaide ran away with the game and their leaders stood up when it mattered most. Obviously, with Tex having that big contested clunk as well. And, I don't know if he was having a shot, but he kicked it from like 65 out.
And then that was a big moment for the Tex, I reckon.
Yeah. Yeah.
He hasn't really been the power forward that I reckon he could be.
This year. He's copped heaps like on social media. I feel bad for him.
I guess the leader of a big club of Adelaide, you're always going to cop a bit when your club's not doing amazing, and especially Texas' performance haven't been amazing of late.
I thought he was real big in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And also, Sloan sealed the game, but Eddie Betts put the nail in the coffin with a ridiculous goal from the boundary. I honestly don't know how he done that.
Yeah, Eddie Betts, power forward, I reckon. Yeah.
That has got to be a nomination of the year.
He doesn't mind a goal of the year nomination, Eddie Betts. especially at the Adelaide Oval. He likes kicking goals there and good goals as well. So, always good to watch Eddie Betts at Adelaide Oval when he wants to kick goals, which is all the time.
Yeah, didn't he have a pocket?
How do you reckon the Crows are going at the moment? Because it's like, it's hard to tell, but they're a bit up and down.
They're sort of a bit like the Eagles almost. They're winning a couple of games, but they're not playing amazing football.
Yeah, I'm not fully convinced.
Yeah.
I think they will play finals.
Sitting fifth at the moment, one game behind GWS and West Coast. halfway through the season does put them in a good spot to play finals. So I guess it's just how they want to play their finals footy and the last bit of footy in the year.
An interesting point. I actually looked at the free kick count, and Adelaide finished on 24 and GWS only 7. So
yeah,
that's
right.
A massive difference. I think Shane Mumford probably gave away a fair few of those, but I don't know if there's any going on there with the home crowd.
Yeah,
but,
not often something that we look at here at Center Square Podcast, but always interesting to get the stats.
And
see how the umpires. Not that they are giving games away, but that's obviously a questionable free kick count.
Yep. And best on ground for me was Tim Taranto. Even though he didn't have a massive fourth quarter, his first three were just huge, winning contested bowl, getting a lot of the footy. I think he had 16 touches in the first quarter, which really got the Giants.
That's just huge.
Who had Sunday? Razor?
Yeah, I did. Sydney and West Coast. Well, pretty much, SCG was in pristine condition on Sunday. Buddy was quite early. Kicked a couple early. And the Swans got going as well, thanks to Buddy. The Eagles, they got in front early thanks to Josh Kennedy and Liam Ryan kicking a couple of goals. But Sydney got back in the lead, leading by 5 points at the first change. In the second quarter, O'Riordan tackled by Rioli. And didn't look to come back on, which I don't think
in Rioli's favour if he chooses to review that at the tribunal. I don't think it's going to look too good on him.
Yeah, he got a week.
He'll get a week.
Offered a week. I don't know if he's going to choose to review that though. Be a bit silly too.
Yeah, well, in that second quarter, it was goal after goal for each team. And then Reed and Franklin, they just kicked goals in that second quarter. At the third quarter, Papley was huge. He was a big target forward. Jeddah, well, he just kicked a ball straight up in the air, centering kick for George Stewart to end up for a Swans goal. Swans are dominating West Coast at that point in the game. But McGovern kicked a bomb from 55 to lift the Eagles up. And unfortunately, it didn't work. But Buddy was just being Buddy, just kicking more and more goals. In the fourth quarter, Darling kicked the early goal thanks to Ryan's work on the wing. Papley and Parker combined for a great goal. Buddy kicked a snag after the siren to win the game on the boundary, but Sydney, too good, winning 18-8, 116 to West Coast, 10-11, 71. And it's fair to say, boys, West Coast, if you looked at the scoreboard without watching the game, I'd say it wasn't a flogging. Because 71 West Coast scored. That isn't really a flogging. If you ask me, but if you watch the game,
I guess it's just the Eagles haven't played good footy at the SCG against them in the last couple of the years. So I think they haven't won a game there for 9 seasons or something. So it's been a while. Again, I guess it's what we were talking about earlier about West Coast winning games, but not playing good football. So when they come up against quality teams of Sydney, you're not going to get away with playing mediocre footy and winning games. So.
Yeah.
Guess they got punished in that sort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Even with Sydney, like, they're not even in form. Like, obviously, they're probably going through a rebuild. But Sydney have always been a strong club, like, no matter what. So.
Yeah, they have been a quality side over the last couple of years with quite a few finals campaigns in there.
Yeah, well, 3 things I learned from that game. The Swans forward line turned up. They were absolutely superb on Sunday. And the second thing I learned, West Coast just can't win in Sydney, and especially anywhere outside of Perth.
Oh, yeah, they're playing all right in Adelaide.
They won the grand final at the MCG last year.
Yeah.
And also, Tom Papley is an absolute superstar, kicking 5 goals, along with Franklin, though. But Tom Papley, you wouldn't normally think he'd kick 5 goals in a game like that. He got what was it, 27 disposals, 5 goals.
Yeah, that's pretty quite good, especially in a forward line with Buddy as well.
Yeah, I'd give
Buddy, he just adds the credits.
I'd give my man of the match to him.
Yeah, he's been in a bit of
Budweiser.
A problem, but yeah. Another solid performance from Buddy.
Well, that's it from me. Let's hand it over to the left leg Levette.
All right, so Monday afternoon footy at the G. Big freeze fly. Started well. Had the slide to MND. Who do you boys think was our best guy down the slide today?
Yeah, Fev with Steven Seagull, I reckon.
I can remember.
Yeah, Freddie Mercury, that was not bad at all. But again, you know, Favola taking the piss out of himself of his Brownlow night performance a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
With Steven Seagull and a bit of pressure point action once he'd come out of the pool. So that, he's got to get my 3 votes for the weekend.
Emptied it, yeah.
For the weekend.
All right. And so going into the first quarter, Collingwood's early pressure in the first quarter was dominant and really put the D's under the pump early. Late goal from Jeffy Garlick, cheap one out the back, saved the goalless opening turn for the D's. Kai's led going into the first break by 15, looking really good. Start of the second, Melbourne came out of quarter time. Quarter time blocks firing for the first 5 minutes or so. But then pretty much after that, Collingwood just took control, took a 21-point lead into half time, and we're looking pretty good. Moving into the third, was goal for goal really throughout the third quarter until Jaden Spaceman Stevenson took an absolute hanger in 550 and finished it off nicely with a goal. And the Pies built on their half-time lead going into three-quarter time, leading by 35 points and looking pretty comfortable. Going into the fourth, Melbourne started really strong as the Pies looked slow coming out of three-quarter time. Melbourne cut the margin to 19 at one stage until Collingwood did Collingwood sort of things and ran out by 41-point winners on a big day in the footy calendar. And 3 things I learned. Melbourne are done for the year. They are gone.
Yep.
Yep.
I think we learned that a while ago, actually.
They're gone for good now. Number two, Collingwood's best is the best in the competition.
Yeah, that's...
That's fair.
Yeah, and I reckon when they are playing their best footy,
yeah,
they are one of the teams to beat.
Yes.
Yeah, they just can't play their best footy like all year round. Yeah, inconsistent. Like, Geelong are doing that.
Yeah.
And number three, Braden Sire's spot should be safe for at least another month after his performance today. Really good. 21 possessions or so, and looked really good. Looked fit.
Yeah.
And, best on ground would have to be Adam Treloar.
Yep, racking him up.
Yeah, 34 and a goal coming out of the centre square. Mm-hmm. So,
so another big thing, boys, coming out of today's game, I think it was Jeremy Howes, Mark, halfway through the game with the studs up, kick that was paid against him. What are your boys' thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you see why they brought the rule in. It's just to, you know, protect, you know, the players. But, I mean, it's taken away.
I guess
part of the game and all that sort of stuff.
I guess it was brought in for the Toby Green sort of marks where you go on it, where the defender's coming back towards you and you're using your foot towards the face. I reckon that's a genuine free kick for the studs up. But Jeremy Howes, I don't reckon that should have been.
It's like a part change when you go over a mark. You know what I mean?
I reckon, you know, it's not genuinely, it is what the law is written as. But I reckon the AFL should review it. How they're gonna interpret it. So
common sense, like, I know it's the law and stuff, but they need to, like, depending on the situation, they just should, you know.
If it's all eyes for the ball, then I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Which it was.
And I don't think there was gonna be much harm coming out of that contest, so I think it was quite safe. And they were talking about it on 360 as well, how there was no real malice in it or it was going to cause any serious injury, so I don't think that should have been a free kick, but it is what the law is, and at the moment we've just got to deal with that until the AFL finds an answer to that.
Yeah,
in my opinion, I reckon for what it was, like with the rule, it should be it should be determined on what the contact was. Like, that was very light contact.
I think
Jeremy Howe with Toby Green in the pass, that's been like pretty
full
on contact, with one of them going into the jaw of a Bulldogs player. I can't remember who it was, but
it was Dow.
I think as long as you're not trying to kick the bloke in the head and you don't make big contact with him, it's all good. As long as you're not genuinely trying to kick him. And you just go on to the footy.
It's fine. Another big talking point of today's game. Obviously, Collingwood's small forwards. I guess they've got a big targets in Cox. And then they've just got the small forwards of Stevenson and Varko and many others. So what are you boys' thoughts on the use of Collingwood's small forwards in the way that they play their brand of footy?
Very well said, aren't they?
Yeah,
like I love how they isolate Dugowie one out.
Yeah,
he's basically the one best one on one forward in the comp once inside 50.
Yeah.
So like, it doesn't really matter who you put on him. You know, he's not gonna let you down.
Yeah.
Like, and the others, like Elliot, was Elliot playing today?
No,
he's injured. Barco's good, he's an experienced player. Stevenson's very good for young.
Just his electric pace. You know, he'll run around defenders and make him look like witch's hats. So
yeah. And they've got obviously Majacek.
Yeah, another target.
So yeah, they're very, it's a good mix between tolls and smalls.
Yeah, and I reckon that's how the modern game is gonna be ended up playing. You know, you'll have the big key position players and then just the electric small forwards. Even the Eagles have got Petrucelli with Kennedy and that, so they're playing a similar kind of brand.
Yeah. Also, the ball use helps. Like, you see Pendlebury and all these guys, they drill in like well.
Yeah.
The target. Like Pendlebury, he has so much space when he gets the ball.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's always good to be getting the ball and using it well.
Yeah.
Just gives your forwards a whole lot more reward when the mids are delivering it straight to them.
Yeah, and that's just one crazy thing. I reckon what you said about Rocky, you said to go, he's the best one-on-one forward in the club. I agree, because not only is he tall, he's like 188 centimetres. He's real strong. He's powerful.
Yeah.
He can take a great mark, and he's super skillful as well.
Yeah.
There's not really much more you could want from a forward.
Yeah. So he's
maybe kicking a few more
goals. Probably his goal can let him down.
Yeah. So he's probably a combination of all the forwards in the league, sort of mixed into one, really. You know, he's a big, strong, powerful forward, and then he can also, he's good on the ground and he's quite electric as well. So,
but he's only 23, and I think, like, as he gets older, probably gets into his prime. Ideally, they want him in the midfield, but he's just too dangerous up four at the moment.
Yeah. Sure. Spot on.
All right, guys, let's move on now. Let's go switch over codes and check out the Cricket World Cup. Let's go to a game that was almost a week ago now. The West Indies. Luca, are you?
This is the West Indies Australia game, West Indies Australia game. Obviously, Australia playing well in the first game, but coming up against the quality side of the West Indies, they were always going to be tested. So the West Indies were using the short ball really well early at Trent Bridge. I think Australia were 38 for 4, 20 overs in or something. So, and then when Maxwell came in, just playing a really unnecessary shot to a short ball, second ball. You know, he had loads of time to build his innings. And I think that was just unnecessary to put more pressure on the coming in batsman. But a solid partnership between Carey and Smith, I reckon. Wasn't huge, but considering the circumstances. And there was quite a lot of partnerships built around Smith. Especially, with the right-hand, left-hand combination of Carey and Smith, I think they went for a partnership of 70-odd in the end. They're both playing their shots and quite defensive, and they're probably the best two players of the short ball, I feel, with hooking and pulling and cutting as well. Because that's what the openers struggled with. They're just getting caught.
My new Warner is very good with the with his pull shots and cut shots. But, you know, with that new ball, they're going to be bowling good length balls, and there's just no opportunity to do that. And that's where it really struggles.
With the height of the West Indies bowlers, they're just so tall and powerful that even short of good length balls are going to be coming up at uncomfortable heights. And that's always going to be hard for the batters, especially on the English wickets. So 100 part then once Carey fell. Coulter Nile came in. I reckon he was man of the match. Genuinely.
Doubt.
So he was quite solid. I think highest World Cup score by a number 8, actually.
Yeah, wasn't it like 92?
Of 90, 92. Yeah, it is ever. So that's a quality score. Smith and Coulter Nile. Smith was the base of the Australian runs, really. Quite a slow innings, but it needed to be slow to build and absorb the pressure that the West Indies bowlers put on Australia early. And he was removed by actually a ripper catch on the boundary by Sheldon Cottrell at deep square leg. I was watching that on my...
Quite lucky.
I was watching that just before I went to bed, and I was like, oh, yeah, he's creamed that one for 6, and then out of nowhere... Sheldon Koch was taking an absolute ripper, so another highlight for the day.
Get the celebrations going.
Coulter Nile again stand out in that innings. Absolutely superb.
Powerful.
Yeah, and I guess considering the circumstances of 38 for 4 at the start, you would never have thought that they were going to make 288. So I guess that just shows how deep Australia can bat. And I guess if we were going to play quality sides like England, I think we've got England in a couple of weeks or a week or two, then if we can bat deep, loads of runs. So that was the end of Australia's innings. Another note on that was the West Indies bowling 24 wides, and they only lost by 15, so, you know, you take out half of them. And it would, could have been a completely different story. So we move on to the second innings of the West Indies. In this innings, Andre Russ and Chris Gayle both passing 1,000 Cricket World Cup runs throughout their career. So quite a good achievement for the both of them. 1,000 Cricket World Cup runs is not an easy thing to do. I think there's only a select number of batsmen that have done it. So it's quite good. And Chris Gayle, he had a lot of reviews this game. You know, I don't know what the umpire had against him, but it just looked everything was going against him. That first one where it was he was given out caught behind and reviewed it straight away because he knows he hasn't touched it.
Yeah.
And when batsmen review it like that, you often know that it's not going to be given out because they're absolutely certain. So he's reviewed it straight away. They've replayed it. The third umpire's gone. No, it's actually hitting the stump. So he probably should have been out for the stump, but bails haven't come off, so can't be out there.
Yeah, that was unbelievable.
I've
never seen anything
and it's,
like
you know, it. It's hit the ball. It's hit the stumps with pace at about 140 k's an hour. So for them to not come off at that speed, you know, they've come off at under 10s, 30 k an hour pies. So for 160 k's to hit the ball with the stumps, the bail should be coming off at that point, I reckon. I think there was one yesterday against Australia and India where David Warner's chopped it on and it hasn't come off. So there's already two cases early in the World Cup, 10 games where the ball's hit the stumps pretty hardly, and the bails just haven't been removed. So probably something to look at for the groundsman. And again, Chris Gayle reviewing another LBW call, and it was staying with umpire's call, so lucky that for the Australians that it was given out. Chris Gayle probably quite salty that it was given out, because had he have been not given out and the Aussies were to review it, he would have still been in.
Shaking his head.
Yeah, so
walking off the ground at this point.
I feel for him, because you're not quite sure what the umpire's got for you when you've been given out three times and reviewed two of them successfully. What else have we got written down here for this game? Yeah, so Aaron Finch has taken a great catch off Adam Zampa at point to remove Nicholas Puran. I think he went for a good 30-odd. Paddy Cummins, he's built a run out of nowhere. And then Khawaja's taken a good catch off Shy Hope to remove him on 68. He's just popped it up a good yorker, and he's caught it at mid off. Jason Holder went for 51, and then big thing coming out of that was Stark's 5-wicket haul, cheap 5 at the tail. So what do you boys think of that? Stark's obviously been a quality bowler. He's been a quality bowler, but again, Australia didn't get too many wickets early, but they just dominated the tail. So, not bad for that. Australian highlights of their innings: Coulson Ireland 92, Smith 73, Carey 45, Carlos Braithwaite with 3-for, Andre Russ with 2-for, then the West Indies, Shy Hope 68. Jason Holder 51, and then Puran the 40-odd. Stark got 5 for 46. Cummins 2 for 41. Then Zampa just the 1. So a quality game in the end, with Australia winning by 15. The main thing coming out of that was probably Stark's 5-wicket haul. Coulson Isles 92, a quality innings. And then, the West Indies having a lot of successful DRS challenges with Chris Gayle. Yeah, a lot of successful DRS challenges with him. All right, who had the next game, guys?
Ethan.
Yep.
Pakistan, Sri Lanka.
Yeah, Pakistan, Sri Lanka. So, unfortunately, this game was rained out without a ball being bowled. coming into the game, I thought Pakistan would have got up. Probably got a bit more depth in both their batting and bowling. Obviously, Sri Lanka as a whole in cricket aren't really doing that well.
Yeah.
They're not. I don't really see Sri Lanka as a big threat in this tournament. And I just think Pakistan would have simply been too good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was rained out. Typical England conditions.
Yeah, especially in the English summer.
Happened in the ICC Champions Trophy 2017. Rained out pretty much every game. So, Bangladesh next. That game could be interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who's probably going to win that one, but I reckon Bangladesh aren't doing too bad at the moment.
No.
They beat South Africa, which was a huge upset. And then Australia versus Pakistan. I think this is a danger game for Australia.
Yeah, I think they've got to win another game. I think they've got to win one of the next two games to sort of cement their spot in the top four to be in the finals.
And the Australia win, even though we beat West Indies, it wasn't convincing, but it was pretty much,
15 they won by in the end.
Yeah, so it wasn't, and I'm not saying West Indies are bad, just saying,
I think
if Australia want to go all the way, I think we have to beat West Indies.
I think Coulton Ole in the end didn't help. The game was already done, but I think he went for 25 or something similar to that.
His batting is better than his bowling.
Yeah.
He's an all-rounder. I seriously think he's
He should be a batting all-rounder, I reckon. Because if he keeps batting like that, there's no reason. Because he hasn't been in too good a form with the ball lately. So,
yeah.
Who had the next game, boys?
I did.
Ray.
England and Bangladesh at Cardiff, Wales. Yeah, sorry, I was trying to put on the English accent. So Bangladesh won the toss, elected the field. And quick fact, Bangladesh have beaten England in the last two meetings at a World Cup match.
Yeah, well.
And third time, well, set to be a belter. But with English conditions on the England side, they were definitely favourites coming in, but straight out of the gates, Roy came out, just played absolutely smart cricket shots down the ground and was absolutely marvellous with 14 fours and 5 sixes with an end of 153 off 121 balls from Jason Roy. But along with Roy Bairstow, he set the platform for the rest of the batsman's attack. But Bairstow, 51 from 50, which was a good 128-run partnership with Jason Roy. But once Bairstow fell, Root came in with a quick 21 off 29. But then Butler came to the crease and to give Roy some support. But Roy fell shortly after. Yeah. Butler scored a brilliant 66 off 44. But Morgan got a start, but really never got going. Wokes and Plunkett put on a 45-run partnership. Sorry. To close the innings, England scoring 6 for 386 from 50 overs. And pretty much after that first innings, Bangladesh, they put on pretty poor fielding efforts out there from what I saw and what the commentators said after the game. But the big news at the innings break was Butler. He had a hamstring soreness, which was actually wrong. It was actually hip soreness. So he didn't take the field, which meant Bairstow, keeping for the innings. Yeah. Woke for the new ball and came up straight away. And first ball mix-up with Tamin and Soyama, the two Bangladesh openers. Archer popped off the bail of Soyama. Sorry if I'm pronouncing this wrong, but Bangladesh went for Wokes early as Archer was bowling fast, short balls and Wokes bowling good length balls, swinging.
Yeah, Jofra Archer bowls the short ball really well, I reckon. He just jogs in and bowls 150 clicks. So I'd love to be bowling that fast with his minimal effort.
Iqbal, I think it is. spooned one straight to extra cover. After they were got a good start. Shakib, he posted 50 from 53. Played very good, smart cricket shots. Roy, he dropped a screamer after his 153, but if he caught that, that would have been a great catch.
Yeah.
But then later on, Roy caught Mushkifa in the backward point gully region for 44. Rashid got the new batsman second ball, and then Shakib posted a smart century, but then was dropped by Root not long after. Stokes, he bowled a great Yorker to dismiss the Shakib batsman for just over 100. Once Shakib fell, the lower order made quick ones, but never really got going and ended up getting bowled out for 280 and England winning the match by 160 runs. Guys,
yeah, so
anything you want to say?
Big thing coming out of that, I reckon. I don't know if you guys saw it, but Jason Roy, when he made his 100, he's actually knocked over the umpire. At the non-strikers end, so I thought that it was kind of funny. Just found it worth saying, I guess. We are a bit of a piss take here at Centre Square Podcast, so we don't mind a bit of the funny stuff in sport. So that's always nice to see. Not nice to see the umpires get knocked over, but a bit of a laugh, we don't mind.
Yeah, and while I'm here, I'm just going to quickly mention the current game happening right now. West Indies are playing South Africa, and the Windies won the toss and elected to bowl first. Lost two quick wickets, but de Kock is still in there, and the score is 2-29 off 7.3 overs. But match has been delayed by rain because it is in England once again. But we're going to hand it over to Callum, who has the Afghanistan New Zealand game.
Yes, I do. So, Afghanistan versus New Zealand on Saturday night it was. New Zealand won the toss, sent Afghanistan into bat. It was a good start for the Afghans with their two openers making a solid 66-run partnership until Lachie Ferguson and Jimmy Neesham brought that to an end pretty quickly with two wickets within three balls. Then the rain came. Halfway through the Afghan innings, stopped play for about half an hour or so, and then back at it. Middle order collapse from the Afghans with no help, but was stabilised by Shahidi with a classy 59 as they scrapped their way to 172. Great bowling performances from the Black Caps, really set them up nicely for their run chase. Bowling performances from Jimmy Neesham and Lachie Ferguson taking 5 wickets and 4 wickets respectively. Was the highlight of the Black Caps bowling innings. Moving on to the New Zealand batting performance. Did it start great. Guptill gone first ball. Nick Goff, I'm pretty sure it was. But after that, was pretty smooth sailing as the Black Caps captain, Payne Williamson, scored an unbeaten 79 to guide his nation to a 7-wicket victory over Afghanistan. Three things I learned. New Zealand are a genuine chance, in my opinion, for this World Cup.
Yeah, well, they're top of the table.
Yeah, well, we're only 12 games in, bro. So top of the table isn't.
Yeah, no, but they've played 3 games.
Yeah,
I know.
if they can beat some England or India in the next game, then I'm sure there'll be a chance. But beating South Africa. No, the play. Hang on.
I'll jump in quickly. They are the only undefeated team. They've played 3 games and won all 3. England are
they're underrated
with 2 wins and 1 loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Callum, continue with your 3 things.
The second thing, Afghanistan are not a genuine chance in this World Cup. They are on the plane home already in my They are gone in my opinion.
Were there ever a chance?
Oh, they had a few. They've got a few, superstars.
Rashid Khan.
Yeah, Rashid Khan. the young leggy Muhammad Nabi plays every franchise cricket there is. IPL.
He looks not, he's 19 and he looks 50.
Yeah, T10, you name it, he plays it. probably not the worst thing to do as a 19-year-old tour of the world as a young leg spinner. So, of course, we're all a bit jealous of young Rashid, but he does play for Afghanistan, so he's got no chance of winning a World Cup anytime soon.
Do you have one more thing to add on there, Callum?
I do. It's Kane Williamson. I reckon he could be the leading run scorer of this tournament. Two more batting performances like the one against Afghanistan could do him very nicely.
Third best batsman in the world.
Yeah.
Cool.
Kane Williamson.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, following up on that, Cal, I guess, what do you boys think of the leading run scorer? Who have you boys putting money on?
I reckon either Rohit Sharma or Shikhar Dhawan.
Yeah, you reckon?
The first two games, those two have been superb. Those two openers from India, they are. You need to break that partnership before it gets.
It's not a bad partnership for India.
You've got Kohli walking out to the crease straight after.
Yeah, exactly.
And then MS Dhoni, I think it's 5 he bats. You know they've got.
Yeah, but you saw
a lot of experience.
You saw MS Dhoni with Australia. He came out with like 5 overs to go. He's not going to get much runs,
I reckon Quinton de Kock's a good chance to be leading run scorer for the comp. I think in South Africa's first game, he just ran out of batting. So, of course, he was struggling to make runs. But I think if they were to be in a good position, obviously he opens the batting. So if they were to be, none down for 50-odd after 10, which is what most sides are looking to do at the moment. I think that's what Australia and India were aiming for last night, to be none down after 10 overs. If most teams are looking to do that, and Quinton de Kock's on 20-odd after 10, none down, I'm sure he can go on and make... He's probably got 2 tons in him this World Cup campaign, I reckon.
Yeah,
something like that. Right, while we're talking about India and Australia just before, I reckon we go on to the last night's game, Australia-India. We'll just discuss it. We didn't have anyone to focus on it, but because I thought we'd all be watching it.
Yeah, we were all watching it.
So what do you guys all think?
I guess the way both teams played, starting off slowly, being done for 50-odd after 10 overs, I think that's how one day cricket is going to be played over the next couple of weeks. Because if you're none down after 10 overs, then you can just accelerate from there, especially with the fast bowlers that are in this World Cup tournament. Yeah. You get through the first 10 overs and the fast bowlers are off. You get onto the spinners, which a lot of teams are playing. You've got easy runs on you if you're 20-odd and you're hitting them well. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Who do you think, in the Australian team, because they've gone for the same team in all three games, is there any players that, in doubt for the next game? And because obviously the top order hasn't always been firing. I think the bowlers are good.
Yeah.
But anyone you would change? I would change Khawaja, but...
Yeah, he's got to go out, I reckon. I think if he doesn't perform in the next game, he's got to go. Another one for me would probably be Zampa. I'd probably bring Nathan Lyon back in.
Yeah.
He was doing a bit of substitute fielding last night. I reckon Zampa's got to go if he has another mediocre performance.
Did you see Zampa's first ball?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just had those couple of overs in both of the... last two games for Tigger. Yeah. He's just gone for 20-odd in an over.
Zampa's good, but ever since Shane Warne, we haven't really had an absolute gun leg spinner.
Nah.
Bring him in.
Well, young Lloyd Pope, I reckon. get him on the plane to
England. This is a big one, ready? Liam Bowe.
Oh, the wizard.
The wizard.
I don't know.
He's a guard.
That's a huge call, Frothy. But
great.
I don't know if he's ready for a World Cup yet.
Yeah, no. So are we happy with that game?
Yeah, boys? I reckon we're happy.
Obviously, India coming up.
Stoked. Yeah, but you never would have, you know, with India making, I think it was what, 350 odd or something. I never would have backed Australia in to get that against the Indian bowlers. So to get so close was actually quite a good effort by them.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Moving on. What is probably maybe the best segment of the show. We're not sure if we're going to keep it with Callan or we're going to change it up each week, but we're going to call it Who is in Strife? Pretty basic.
Yeah.
Someone basically who hasn't performed well in the last couple of weeks or
could be a
the last couple of games, whatever. Yeah, it can be anyone in the sporting industry or anyone really. It doesn't have to be footy or cricket. It can be any sporting industry. So, Callan, we're gonna take it to you. Who is in strife?
All right, who is in strife? I reckon Glenn Maxwell is in some strife.
Oh yeah, playing that ridiculous shot, second ball in.
Yeah. That's way too excited.
That's absolutely ridiculous. You know, it's not under 13s where your first ball was a free hit. You know, so there's no need to be playing ridiculous shots like that, especially when your team's 4 for 38 or whatever they were.
Yeah,
because he's only scored 32 runs in his first three innings. It hasn't looked like playing a proper innings yet. And his spot could be up for grabs. I reckon Sean Marsh is banging down the selection door.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing is, Maxwell's kind of someone you have to have in because he's a batsman and a part-time...
And he's a gun fielder as well, I reckon.
Yeah.
He's probably one of the best fielders in the Australian lineup at the moment. Yeah.
And he can add a bit of bowling if they need off-spin.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you take out Maxwell... You might have to bring in Nathan Lyon as well to have two spinners because you don't want to be bowling just with Zampa.
Yeah, nah.
Because you want to have at least two.
You know, give Stevie Smith the ball
true.
For a bit.
Yeah, true. Forgot about him.
I think he's got a World Cup average of 30-odd with the ball or something they were showing last night. So not amazing, but I think he's taken a wicket or two in the World Cup.
Pretty Fijian as well.
Oh, he can bowl. He can roll the arm over, I guess.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about? I want to...
In Strife. I've got an In Strife. Quick...
Yeah.
No, hold up. Oh, yeah.
All right, cheers, Gray. For the West Coast Eagles, Nathan Vardy.
Oh.
Now, Vardy. Three disposals yesterday.
He's been good all day, by the way.
We know he's a premiership player. We know he played well on the 29th of September.
We know he plays for West Coast, Bray. That's all you seem to care about.
With the big man we saw in Leaderville the other day, Nick Nat, he's coming back, and I think it's going to be a tight hustle for Hickey or Vardy. Boys, who would you go for, Hickey or Vardy?
Probably Hickey. He's been quite good the last month.
Amazing.
I think ideally they want Vardy just because he's a bit more agile and he can probably go forward. And Hickey's a log basically.
He's a Sean Darcy, I reckon. Or Aaron Sandilands, you could probably compare him to.
If you play Hickey and Nat Nui, you probably when Nat Nui's on the ground,
have Hickey
off.
Hickey
will be. On the bench.
They
can't go in with three ruckmen, I don't think.
Yeah. So I think maybe Vardy could get dropped to the waffle. Either way, one of them is going to get in the waffle. So he's going to come straight back in.
Yeah.
Even though he's overrated. In my opinion.
Do you boys think that Nat Nui should play this weekend in the waffle as the West Coast Eagles have their bye?
A journalist asked him if he's going to play for Swans.
Yeah, I know. I remember seeing that on Facebook. I reckon we're better reporters than that because it doesn't take half a brain to realise that the Swan District's footy club have no alignment with the West Coast Eagles. There have been some ex-players from Swans that have gone up to the Eagles, but that means jack shit in the way of the alignment. So
I don't think he will. I don't think he'll play. I think they'll really want him back in. Even like, but imagine if he gets injured again.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, what is he, 28?
Yeah, I think he's only got one more big injury left in him and then he's gone, I think.
Yeah.
Touch wood.
Yeah, touch wood. Yeah, touch the desk, yeah. Although he is an Eagles player, so it'd be nice to see Fremantle dominate the West for a year.
Yeah.
But they've so actually... So no one else has any strife
segment
that I want to say?
No, not really.
If that's not, if it's okay.
Maybe my junior coach after the weekend.
You gotta do it now. What's wrong?
What's he done?
No,
I'm just joking. I just made one up on the spot.
Oh. Yeah, okay. Well, I'm just gonna put a few mentions in. Yeah. Ash Barty winning the Paris Open. No, French Open.
Yeah, that's not bad. Sorry.
Barty party.
Or the Barty party.
Well done to her.
Yeah, not a bad effort from her. I think she won it in straight sets or something. So. Good for the Australians, and especially being a female tennis player.
With the Australian Open now.
Yeah,
that's the next step. I think that's a couple of months away, though.
Probably a sport you guys don't follow. Formula One, Daniel Ricciardo qualifying fourth in the Renault. Good effort from him. Renault not being one of the slower cars.
Yeah.
Fourth isn't bad, and then finishing sixth in the race, not bad for our man Daniel.
Yep.
Anything else you boys want to add on?
What about the certainty and who, worst case scenario?
Hey,
do you know the scenario? I think it can happen, and what's like a certainty and during the week and anything.
I don't think we've prepared that too well. We'll check that in the next one.
I can think of one. Stay tuned.
Yeah, next episode. Yeah, stay tuned, guys.
Stay tuned. Next week. Guys, is that all?
Yeah, I reckon. We were good enough? You know, that's 65 minutes or so, so we might have to edit that out to make it 40 minutes or something, because I think there's a lot of going on in there. So. Yeah. But, you know, it's our first one.
We're not professional.
About 1,000 Instagram followers away from getting the blue tick, so we're not too far. So, don't forget to if you haven't already, follow us on Instagram at Centre Wicket Podcast and like the page on Facebook as well. That's where we'll be sharing the links to our weekly episodes. So. We'll be filming them or recording them on Monday night most weeks, and then they should be up middle of the week if we're going to edit them.
Yep. And just a quick one, if there's any topics that you'd like us to discuss on the potty, feel free to DM
us on Instagram. DM us. That's how it's going to be.
Yeah, just hit us up.
And we will reply.
Yep, sure will.
Yep.
Cheers, boys.
Right, guys.
Yeah, no worries.
Good show tonight.
Yeah.
Good show tonight. We'll wrap it up now. And we will catch you guys next week.
Good on you guys.
See you later, fellas. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Ray, do you save this on your one? Cool. I was going to say, I don't want to lose an hour. Have a time. All right. Easy.
See you later, catch boys. Thanks for tuning in, guys.